Well, assuming you all didn't die during the eclipse, thank you for joining me for the 266th episode of the Parish of the Patriots. I'm recording this, as usual, I'm recording this over the weekend. And as just a kind of humorous programming note, I've recorded the Tuesday. I'm recording the Tuesday show before having done the Monday show. I'm going to record the Monday Daily Nationalist. My plan is Monday morning, and yet I'm recording this on Sunday morning. So we may all just not even be... Everybody got raptured. Y'all know what I think about the rapture, by the way. If you like new, this is the first time you're back. Always one of those people. Now I'm saying that like funny. Everybody got raptured. The evangelicals are all standing around during the eclipse, maybe. Maybe they're all going to be out there waiting. Get beamed up. Beam me up, Scotty. Beam me up out of here to spaceship Jesus in orbit or something. Yeah, I don't know. But assuming none of that happened, then you're hearing this. But then again, if you're not here, if humanity got wiped out, then no one's going to hear this show anyway. I'd still do the Christian specific segment. I could spend the whole first half of the show doing anime reviews. I'm going to assume that you're all here, that we're still here. It's Tuesday. And once again, it's time for the Parish of the Patriots. Believe it or not, hopefully you'll get something out of the show. If you do, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. If you want to, if you want to put something in the plate, it is very much appreciated. I have the ultimate privacy coin, which is snail mail. See the address right here on the Parish of the Patriots Parish of the Patriots page. I was still hung up thinking about anime music. I said the Parish of the Patriots song. I don't even know what that would be. No, I've got the snail mail address. I had somebody else. Yeah, I haven't mentioned this in a while, but I had somebody else once again confused. There are links here on these pages here on Radio Alban that says we can now accept donations. It has crypto addresses. Those are Sven's addresses from before he went to jail. And if you have sent something to that, that's fine. I'm sure he'll have access to that when he gets out. I don't have access to that, by the way. I have no access to that. Can't touch it. Don't want to touch it. Whatever's in there, if there's stuff in there for him when he gets out, then so be it. It's a great thing. But yeah, those are his addresses from before we went away. Those aren't my addresses. And I understand. I see it. I see where it gets confusing. But you can also understand why I'm not taking those down, obviously. So, you know, just... I haven't reminded people in a while, and I had somebody recently get confused again. And so, because they were like, you know, well, I sent some this. I'm like, where did you get this address from? Because I just deal, you know, in the ultimate privacy coin, snail mail. I've gone analog. And they told me, I'm like, yeah, those are Sven's addresses. But that's all good. That's all good. No idea what I'm going to talk about today, as you can probably tell. Hopefully it doesn't show. Hopefully, if I would have not said anything, you'd be like, man, this guy must have a perfect show scripted out. I do have an idea of what the Christian-specific segment is going to be, but as far as first half of the show, I don't know. It's one of the things that's been tough about doing the Friday and Monday Daily Nationalist show. A lot of time I cover stuff that, you know, normally would go into the first half of this show. All my material is going out on Monday and Friday. I don't even know what the hell to talk about. This is where the listener supporter mailbag bails me out. That's what gives me things to talk about. Let's hit the listener supporter mailbag, by the way, via the ultimate privacy coin snail mail. Jackie, I just wanted to let you know, Jackie, I did get it. And I do, as always, of course, it is very much appreciated. GPD, I would like to congratulate the U.S. government on finally pissing off Russia to the extent that Russia is taking the proverbial gloves off. That is from Mr. Tui. We shall see. I just read a story this morning. Like I said, I'm recording the show on Sunday morning. And I always, before I sit down and record, just in case, like, you know, the world's ending today, I won't waste my time recording this. And you know, but I do. I skim the headlines just to see what's going on, you know, just so I actually have a feel for what's going on. And I saw a story this morning to where the U.S., you know, with some of its vassal states are going to go purposely go sail into and do military exercise in waters that China is claiming. You know, of course, on the grounds of the international rules-based order of democracy, values of who we are. And well, at the same time, sending more bombs to Israel to blow up Palestinian hospitals, because that's the values of who we are in a rules-based order, whatever. And it was just like, you know, it never stops. And they, of course, everything they say is opposite world. Well, you know, we're sailing into these waters claimed by China to do military exercise to preserve the peace. You take intentionally escalatory action, and you do so saying we're preserving the peace. It'd be like if somebody come up and just kept calling you names and being belligerent, and then another person walks up and says, hey, why are you doing that? That guy may get enough of that and punch you in your ugly ass face. And you're like, oh, well, I'm preserving the peace. See, I want this guy to understand that he doesn't want any of this, so he better tread lightly. I might just walk up, punch him in the face. You don't know. I laugh when people, I'll see people, and they'll say, you know, they'll look around, and they'll say something along the lines of, yeah, nothing ever happens. You know, people point out, and you look, because I look at this in the context of these things are building up slowly. Diplomacy is not losing your temper in a bar fight. These things build up slowly, and it's a step-by-step thing. But you'll have people, and they'll say, yeah, whatever, nothing ever happens. I don't know how old, you obviously have no way to know. But understand that your lifetime is nothing. You know, it's nothing in the context of when you're talking about history. You 30 years old, that's a joke. You know, one man can live to 100 years old. It's rare, but it's not unheard of by any means. If a man were 100 years old today, that would mean he was born in 1924. Think of everything that has happened in that short time. And that's historically speaking, that is still nothing. 100 years is nothing. 200 years is nothing. History spans thousands of years. And yet somebody that 30, 40 years old or younger, whatever, and they'd be like, oh, yeah, well, there ain't nothing ever going to happen because I haven't seen it happen in my lifetime. In your lifetime is a joke. And one of the things about being a believer and coming to understand, I'm not preaching early at y'all. Y'all know. But I mean, it is understanding how minute your life is, you know, how extremely short it is. And it's weird because I'll say this, and it rubs some people the wrong way. I've always kind of, I don't know, confused by that when I talk about how short this life is, and people be like, no, you know, you can't say that. I don't understand. I find that somewhat reassuring. This life is short. History moves slowly compared to your life, because your life is just like a blip. You know, it's a drop in the bucket. It's a drop in the ocean. Your time on this world is, historically speaking, your time in this world is insignificant. It is. No, it really. Go back. Read about people that lived years before, you know, people in history, and read it and understand that that was a real, because you read things, you disconnected from it, you know? But you read it and understand this was a real living human being that felt things and had dreams and hopes and emotions, and they're long since dead. It don't even matter now. Anyway, we'll see. Their whole terrorism in Russia proper. Yeah, it's not too cool. We'll see. And then they turn around. They turn it around. It's like they have ADD. You know, they can't even focus on one thing. And then they turn around. Now we're going to do the China war. We got the China war. And then I was reading these articles the other day. I have one more in the listener supported mailbag, by the way. I'm kind of milking it because, as I said, I don't even know what I'm going to talk about. And I read another story the other day. It's like, oh, U.S. government now, all these people in the quote-unquote Biden administration, they're all really, really worried now because, you know, about Iran attacking Israel. And it's like as if Iran is the problem. You know, are they really concerned that Iran, they say an attack from Iran against either America or Israeli targets is imminent? Like, Iran just woke up one day and decided to do this out of the blue. Yeah, well, your best buddy, your most valuable ally in the history of all histories, keeps going out and causing all of these problems for you. Once again, as I've said previously, no one can ever tell you what our greatest ally is actually doing for us, besides causing problems. Your greatest ally ever decided to bomb their embassy in Syria. So they bombed Syria and Iran, and Iran at the same time, because the embassy is considered soil for the home country. Like, if you and the Iranian embassy in Syria, technically by international agreements and law, you're considered to be in Iran proper while you're in that embassy. That's why, you know, authorities from that country can't just come into your embassy in theory. You know, it's considered your home territory. So actually, Israel managed to bomb Syria and Iran at the same time. Thanks, greatest ally. Thank you. You are surely my greatest ally. You're my greatest ally. You're helping me out left and right, causing me all these problems. And now they're talking about they worried about Iran. While they're trying to then turn around, they're dragging the Philippines, Japan. Yeah, top of my head, I don't remember. Another one of their, oh, Australia. Australia, Philippines, and Japan. They're going to drag them into these waters, intentionally, into waters claimed by China to do military exercise. What? Oh, we're doing this to promote peace. It's like they could do these big military exercises with South Korea. And then when North Korea doesn't like it, they're like, see how much they hate peace. It's just crazy. Okay. Oh, we're going to go do these military. And then yeah, they're like, well, that's because these waters, by international law, belong to everybody. And then I saw another story just a couple weeks ago where the U.S. has unilaterally decided to claim some extra water of its own, doing the same thing that, of course, they're wagging their finger at China about. Anyway, like I said, I had one more here. Hi, Dan. Hope things are going well for you and yours. Got clown world going on at work. I like my job. I've never had such an easy and low-stress job. My stress that I do have comes from many of my coworkers. I don't know how things are still even going in this country. I know people complain about the young people having a bad work ethic, and many do, but I'm seeing it in all age groups. I don't know how these people pay their bills. They call in, or they just quit. Times, the company tries to hire people, and then they don't even show up for an interview. Many others will work a day or two and then quit. Anyway, keep cool down there. And that's from Tony. I do appreciate it, Tony. And you're right. I mean, things are really, you know, breaking down in such a way in society. Because people always look at the big picture. You know, they talk about big, you know, things, you know, like ambiguous things that it's hard to define. You know, the government, corporations, Wall Street, banking, finance. But what makes things work are all the little gears, all the little people, you know? And the queen is the most important ant in the ant den. But if there were zero ants willing to do any work, then the ant den is going to die off just as quick as if something happens to the queen. You're right. I mean, things are, I observe, we're all observing in real time, you know, society breaking down and no longer functioning as you kind of would expect it to. And I'd say my view on it is this just the start of it. And there's multiple things contributing to that. I mean, people point at one aspect and then, you know, point and scream and yell at that. And then miss that there's a whole bunch of things. It's kind of a complicated thing, but you can sum a lot of it up, I think, in the fact that people have nothing they're striving for any longer. I think people on deep down, like a subconscious level, understand that there's no future in this country. There's not a future here in the U.S. There's something coming. There's something different, you know, coming about. The empire is crumbling, you know, and so why do you want to invest into a failing deal, you know? I mean, it's kind of like if you were working at a job and you understood, and you're like, you have access to the books, and you're looking at the books, and like, well, this company's going belly up, like, in weeks. You're not going to go out and take out a loan for a new house because you understand you things are, you know, but you don't have another job yet to jump to. I think it's something kind of akin to that. People understand. I mean, the social fabric's coming down. People have abandoned religion. They've abandoned their tradition. Many of them are urbanized now, and they're living in these little pods and in just an unnatural environment in the city. And there's all of these things contributing. You know, the cost of living is gotten just completely ridiculous. You know, I've seen people say, and you know, how do you argue with it? I've seen younger people say things along the line of, well, if I go and work hard, or if I just live at my parents' house and play video games all day, basically my standard of living doesn't change because everything's so expensive. Even just all of these things contributing in, you know, when young men, what are they working for? A wife that they can't have because the candidates aren't exactly primo material any longer. You know, they're dead end jobs. I mean, they're dead end jobs. You know, even like you say, it's in all age groups. You know, if somebody in their 40s and 50s, you know, there is no retirement plans anymore. There's not. It's not like, oh, you can work at this one company, you go to work this one company and you work 30 years or you work your whole life and you'll retire with a pension and you'll have a nice, comfortable retirement. Those days are long gone. And they say, oh, it's a shame. These foolish people, like it's their fault. These foolish people, they haven't saved up for retirement. Well, they can just starve to death. Did you see, by the way, and I don't remember if I've mentioned this before, did you see, by the way, that the head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, came out and did an interview and he said, well, people are just living too long in this country and it's ridiculous they could retire at 65. We raise that up to 70. Work harder for longer. Meanwhile, this guy is filthy rich. And then you have conservatives or libertarians whining about class envy. We need to cut Social Security. Republicans, well, that'd be one thing. How about cutting aid to Israel? No, we can't do that. But this Social Security, we got to do something about it. And Social Security is a joke anyway. That ain't a retirement. That ain't a pension. And people will say, well, the people, you know, Social Security was never meant to be a pension, and yet people won't think that they could use it like that. No, the companies, the corporations, they planted that idea. The days of if you show some loyalty to the company, they'll take care of you when you retire. Those are long gone. Got to maximize those profits. And I'm old enough, I remember the transition. I remember when a company hired you, they said, you know, if it says, oh, they had a retirement plan, you assume that meant you had a pension. If you would come to work there, do a good job for 30, 40 years, you know, however long you were there, you know, the longer you're there, a better pension you're going to have. You can retire with a pension. And now remember, the company be hiring. We have retirement plan. People are like, oh, they have a pension. And they go there. It's like, no. We'll take however much money out of your check and put in Wall Street. We'll put it in a fund on Wall Street and it'll go up. And then at some point you can maybe retire on that or something. Uh-huh. That ain't the same. Ain't the same. How much you gonna take out of the check? But no, how much do you pay then? You know, because you're thinking, well, okay, well, I mean, if the job pays enough, yeah, sure, that I guess I could make that work. We pay just enough for you to live check to check if you skimp. So wait a minute. You only pay enough for me to live check to check if I skimp. And the only actual retirement plan is if you take money out of my check that I can't afford to give you because I'm living check to check and put it on Wall Street. And oh, by the way, if Wall Street crashes or if the fund you put it in, oh, I don't know, decides to allocate all the losses to your fund instead of the other big financial industries fund, which they've been caught doing, by the way, all the losers go to you and the big boys like BlackRock, they're always the winner. You just lose the money. But hey, that's the way it goes. It's part of our free market. It's part of the free market. People are living longer. Larry Fink had the nerve to say that, by the way, when actually the average lifespan in this declining society is actually going down. People are living longer than ever before. Thank you, Larry. There's no social cohesion. There's no social cohesion. You know, there's no religion. There's no common religious belief. People don't believe in anything. You know, I don't know, man. You know, young men, they have no hope for finding a normal young woman and settling down with her. Like, they want to go buy a new car and they go out there and all that's available are tote the note lots. And these things have got high mileage on them, covered in tattoos, graffiti all over the side of the car. You roll it up, you're like, well, I want a new car. Well, you can't get a new car. The only cars available are on these we tote the note lot down at the barrio. So you go down there. And all down there are these cars. Every one of them got graffiti all over the side of it. Yes, ladies, that's what them tattoos look like, is graffiti all over the car. Got graffiti all over it. Got holes in the hood where they got the nose piercings. And they got 300,000 miles on them. They've had pistons been up and down in that engine a whole. The pistons have been up and down in that engine so many damn cycles. There's so many revolutions per minute been through that thing. You can't even you can't even count it. And they're trying to charge new car prices. You go down there, the salesman trying to charge you $50,000 for a 300,000-mile car that got graffiti on it, and the piston's been pumping up and down in that thing, you know, could 6 million times. Trying to charge you new car prices. Everything is deteriorating. There's everything. I see it around me. And one of the advantages for getting some, I've said this before, you see the changes. Young people, 20, even 30 years old, they ain't necessarily seen the changes. I'm in my official, I guess I'm officially into mid to late 50s now. You know, and I've seen the change. And I've seen how things have gone from people still thinking that, you know, it's going to get better and we're going to have better days ahead. You know, you can go through tough times if you think there are going to be better days ahead. You'll soldier through. But when you just have this mindset that things are just progressively going to continue to get worse, it's hard to soldier on. You know, it's just like, what's the point? Work till you're 70. And then you can live in absolute poverty if there's anything left in Social Security, because there's no pension funds. Because Larry Fink and BlackRock have all the money. There's no pension fund. So, yeah, you can live 2 years in absolute poverty after you retire at 70. And then die after you've paid into Social Security your whole life. But, you know, yeah. See it everywhere. See it the way that people interact with one another. You know, I don't mean that, you know, I'm on the fence as far as what the internet, you know, plus and minuses, you know. I mean, on the one hand, you have more access to information you ever had before if you're willing to go look for it. The problem is most people aren't willing. They still want to be spoon-fed everything, in which case for the vast majority of people, it hasn't actually helped. They're going to sit around and whatever the government, the media tells them, that's what they're going to go with. Or if they look anything up, they're just going to look up people that already think the way they do. And they'll sit there and talk at each other. Yeah. See how right we are. Everybody thinks the same way that I do. I always said that was one of the most dangerous, the worst things about, you know, censorship. You know, talking about, like, on, for instance, Twitter. I refuse to call it X. I'm always going to call it Twitter. Yeah. Is the danger isn't that, you know, people are going to say things that disagree with you. The danger is you create these echo chambers and people just talk with other people that think the way they do. And then they think, well, everybody thinks this way. And then when they finally do run into somebody that disagrees or has a different worldview than they do, they think this is some freakish outlier. They won't even realize, no, other people have other ways that they view the world. I'm not sure You know, I mean, I do this show on the internet, and being able to talk to all of y'all and being able to do this show is a good thing. I think it's a good thing. But I look at so many other aspects of it, you know. Social media has just been an utter ruination. It is. It's just an utter ruin for society. It just encourages. It encourages the worst in people. And you don't even realize it, you know. And you look at these women, and they get addicted. They're doing this TikTok, you know, and everything is so funny. Because all these people, they want to be like, you know, I don't know, how do you want to put it? They want to go viral. You know, my videos are going to go viral. They're going to be a TikTok celebrity, whatever the hell that means. And it's funny because, like, virtually all of these women, because it seems to be a woman thing. I don't really see this, you know, for men so much. But, you know, all these women, like, that are on TikTok, you know, somebody say, oh, this latest video. And it doesn't matter what the subject matter is. 99% of the time, some woman on TikTok, there's going to be some version of flashing her tits around for everybody to see. I mean, they're covered. It's TikTok. It's not OnlyFans yet. Haven't graduated to that level yet. But it is. It's some version, you know, of look at me. Look at me. It brings the absolute worst. It brought the absolute worst out in people. And the way people talk to one another, you know, people are so rude. People are rude IRL now. And I think some of that is because of internet culture. You're talking to somebody you ain't ever going to see. You're rude. People rude each other now. People rude in the store. People rude here. They do rude ass things, you know, to other people. They all worked up over stuff. And it's like, why are you worked up over that? It doesn't even matter. But they worked up over it like it's a huge thing. Look at the way this guy parked. Look at this guy. You don't park like that. Why do you give a shit? Does it affect you in any way, shape, or form? Well, no. But who does he think he is going around parking like that? I think on a subconscious level, people realize that things are getting worse. You know? And it creates a sense of hopelessness. You know, it creates a sense of why bother? Why bother? You know, if you go in and you work hard, or if you go in and dick off on the clock, you're going to get paid the same. And none of it's enough to really get ahead. You know, so why bother? Why bother? Now, I understand, though, you know, where Tony's coming from with it. I mean, I do. I get it. Been there. You know, been there and done that. I get this comes with this different perspective. People used to come up to work and do their jobs, and then, you know, they might talk about what they got going on with their coworkers on break or at lunch. But, you know, they mostly just focused on work. And now it's like everybody focusing on just bringing their drama, you know, up to their job and shit, you know. And of course, women do this especially. Women, if you hire women, they're going to turn everything into a viral TikTok video and bring their drama up to the job. That's all they do. That's all they do. And without all of, I guess, get kind of back on point. Without all people doing, the problem here is too, without people actually doing things, actually doing the jobs, nothing gets done. You know, things continue to break down. You know, trains derail. Sometimes you have big things like, you know, trains derailing and this and that, but it's just reflective everywhere, and it's little bitty stuff at first, but it's just society can't even function on a most base form unless the worker ants are doing something. Like, if the worker ants are not working, the den is going to die out. And for, again, a whole variety of reasons, the workers' ants are just, they're despondent. You know, why bother? Why bother anymore? The government's answer to this is legalize more drugs. I saw a story the other day in Germany, which had been completely, you know, is in the process of being completely deindustrialized by their greatest ally, the United States. They're legalizing weed now. You know, that's the answer. That's the answer. Legalize weed. Everybody can just get stoned and they'll feel like everything's okay. Those that don't want to smoke, we can go to the doctor and get some antidepressants and release chemicals in your brain to trick you into thinking you're not as miserable as you are. Doctor, I'm so depressed. I'd never make it as a doctor, especially not a, like, you know, psychiatrist or something, you know. Doctor, I'm depressed. I'd be like, yeah, no shit. Look at this world. I'm depressed too. Look, there ain't nothing wrong with you. If you don't look around this world and if you look around this world and you're not depressed, then maybe we need to look at you. Put you in an institution. Get you checked out, because there's no way you can look at Clown World and not be some level of depressed. This is where we're at. The lottery. Yeah, then look at what the government does. For this, their answers to this problem. You know, you got to have people doing things. I always, you know, on a fundamental level, you got to have people doing things for the society to work. You know, people have to be building things and maintaining the infrastructure. Farmers have to grow food. Ranchers have to raise livestock so you have something to eat. You have to have all these things actually taking place, people doing business for the society to function. And you're seeing that break down more and more. And the government's answer to this failing is, you know, the big news, hey, the whatever, what the hell they call it, Mega Million, whatever, you know, the multi-state lottery is up to $1 billion. What's up to $1 billion? Because you ain't never going to win the damn thing. But that's people's hope, gambling. The government's answer is gambling. Give the people gambling and legalize drugs. And this is somehow going to fix it. See, there's nobody interested in fixing the problems. Because the system's so corrupt, everybody's just grafting off the top, running some kind of money scam. You know, well, we got to offer something to the people. Well, we'll tell them if they buy these lottery tickets, they might be the next Larry Fink, only they're never going to be. You know, that's, we'll give them some more legalized drugs. If weed isn't enough, if we legalize weed, if that's not enough, we'll legalize heroin. Hell, we'll get these people bombed enough to where, somebody drugged out and laying on the sidewalk, they're not bitching about things. They're happy. Look at them. What's wrong with you? That's as if it's just going to keep rolling on. You know, you hear about these people and their planning grand plans, you know. They're building bunkers. Yeah, I always hear that, you know, the super rich, they're building bunkers. And I laugh at this. I do. I laugh at it because it's like, well, okay, these people aren't capable of taking care of themselves. Your whole success in life is based around a usury scheme. You're not going to survive any time at all in the bunker. If somebody don't bring these assholes their food and cater to them, they have no idea what they're going to do in the damn bunker. They're building the bunker. Okay. Do they think the food is just going to magically teleport in there? Well, they're going to store food. Okay. Well, there is a limited capacity, which means that at some point in time, their dumb ass is going to have to crawl out of the bunker. What they think they're going to find out there, you know? I don't know, man. It is. It is continuing breakdown. Government's answer, lottery and more legalized drugs. Yeah, that, like, if people just shut up and quit complaining, everything will be fine. We can keep running more usury scams. We can keep running more money scams on people. And somehow this is a viable path forward. Anyway. Yeah, good stuff. It's that time. We got to get in. We're just going to keep this show rolling. We got to get into the Christian specific segment. If you're new here, stick around for this. Give it a shot. I think maybe you'll like it. To the rest of y'all, you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. One of the things I've heard over the course of my life from Christian people is something along the lines of, you know, when talking about the Old Testament versus the New Testament, is basically something along the lines of, well, you know, God was meaner back. I've literally heard that verbatim quote before. God was meaner in the Old Testament than in the New Testament. And I was thinking and reflecting on, you know, why people believe that. And as you go through your Bibles and study and read both, you really do come to understand, you know, how the two fit together. But I was thinking about this idea that God was somehow meaner in the Old Testament than in the New Testament. And when you first start thinking about it, kind of, we can kind of chuckle and say that sounds kind of, you know, kind of silly. But I think there is some a darker path that can be opened up with that line of thinking as to why, what motivates people to believe that outside of just simply not understanding, you know, what is written. And I think one of the things that's dangerous about this line of thinking that God was different then than he is now is this desire to create a situation to how do I want to say this, to redefine God's grace through Jesus Christ, what Jesus Christ was doing, to redefine that into a situation where you can sin without consequence. I see this in a lot of the ways churches, you know, recruit new customers, recruit new members into the congregation, or attempt to do so. And, you know, we've talked about it here quite a bit, you know, this idea that, you know, well, you just have to say you accept Jesus Christ and everything is good. And I think it's really tempting, for people to start redefining God's purpose through Jesus Christ into creating a situation where you can sin without consequence. Grace, God's grace through Christ, is not sin without consequence. Your sins always have consequence. Now, sometimes those consequences play out in your regular earthly life. I mean, if you make a bad decision, if you sin and get totally drunk, hop in your car and take off and smash into a tree, that's the consequence of your sin. It's very real. It's concrete in your life. Your sins will have consequences in this life. That's an immediate thing. I always say, you know, people try to get this idea, and I think this is an idea that comes from Satan to a certain extent, but like God's laws, God, when God, what God forbids, you know, sin, it's like God wanting you to, you know, like a strict parent that doesn't want you to go out and have any fun. And yet it's not fun. It's destructive. If you go out and get shit-faced and crash your car into a tree, how good of a time did you actually have? The consequences always turn out to be a negative. Now, obviously, sin can result in an immediate sense of pleasure, but there's a negative consequence attached to it. But on a grander scale, on the spiritual level, your sins have consequence too. And don't get me wrong, we are under grace by Jesus Christ, through Jesus Christ. But never forget, it is written, don't forget, you were bought at a price. It is a severe price. Your sins have a spiritual consequence for you. And Jesus bore that consequence for you. Don't ever sit there and get this idea that, oh, well, you know, it doesn't matter how much I sin because, you know, I'm saved. I said that I believe in Jesus Christ. But he paid that price. Your sins, the consequences of your sins on a spiritual level, for you to become under grace, Jesus had to pay that price. He took that consequence on for you so that you could be under grace. Now, if you get sucked into an idea, if a person gets sucked into this idea that, well, sin doesn't matter because it's paid for anyway, do you not disrespect the price that Jesus Christ paid for you? How often do Christian believers sit around? Because I have, once in a while, I will sit around, usually around Easter time, and, you know, when you read the telling of everything that happened during the crucifixion and what happened to Jesus, really put yourselves so as to speak, in his shoes. In other words, think about what it means. Don't just read it and say, oh, yeah, that was really awful. No, personalize it. Think about the amount of suffering you're talking about, and not just suffering. I mean, yes, there were two other guys crucified with him as well, but they were suffering because they were actual criminals. But suffering like Jesus suffered, knowing that you hadn't done anything wrong. You know, it's one thing to go to, for instance, it's one thing to go to prison. Like if you go and you commit a crime, you go rob a bank and you get arrested and you go to prison. Well, you don't like it because you're in prison. But I mean, it's kind of, you knew that was a part of the deal when you decided to rob the bank. But if you get swooped up, thrown in prison, arrested, thrown in prison, and you didn't actually even do anything, this is a whole nother thing, because you're sitting here, you're being punished, and you did no wrong. That is a much more grinding situation. Jesus, you really read through there and think about the pain and the suffering that Christ endured as a consequence of your sins. Being stabbed, being nailed up, being ridiculed, people spitting at you, calling you names, insulting the people that you know and love and care about around you, are in hiding, and they have to go around and pretend they don't know you, and they're looking at you out of the side of their eye, but they dare not say anything, and you're isolated and alone, and you're paraded through public, and people are jeering at you. Some of the same people, by the way, that were showing up to see the miracles you were doing just a short time before. They're showing up and they're jeering you, and everybody's having a laugh at your expense, dressing you up, shoving a crown of thorns on your head. Really think about what it means. Don't just read the words. Think about what that would feel like. Something, just a fraction of what that would feel like. And then tell me you're going to go out and just sin because it's all paid for anyway. It's insulting. Again, we're warned in the New Testament, don't forget, you were bought at a price. Don't belittle that. Don't disrespect it. You were bought at an extremely high price. You know, I mean, it's like sometimes people, you know, when a person is slow to anger, And a person tries to be reasonable and tries to be nice to other people, you know, there will be people in your life that will take that as weakness, and they'll attempt to take advantage of you or even become insulting. And then they're shocked to discover, no, I was just being nice. Actually, you know, if you want to get ugly, I'll get real ugly real fast. See, people misinterpret God's mercy and grace and what he was doing through Jesus Christ, and then try to turn that into, well, now I can sin without consequence. But you see, again, it's the same God from the Old Testament. They don't like looking at the Old Testament because what? Quote unquote, God was meaner then. But understand, it's the same God. He went out on a limb and did this for you. Don't mistake that for, oh, he changed his mind. I've heard that before. I've heard where people will say, well, the reason the Lord came is because, see, he came to understand, and he understand what he was doing before wasn't working. Like he'd made a mistake. This was part of establishing his original attempt. His original intent from the beginning for man to be able to fulfill his potential purpose, or at least for a select number of people to fulfill their intended purpose in this world. And to bring that about, this had to happen. But it's the same God. Now you're going to turn that into, oh, well, I can just disrespect all over what the Lord went through for me, the consequence of my sin, and just pile it on. In a spiritual sense, you're just become one of the crowd, insulting him, casting stones at him, and mocking him, if you let yourself get into that notion, that idea that, well, it doesn't matter now. Now it's a green ticket. I can sin all I want to. See, there's the problem. All you want to. We're all subject to sin. We're all subject to our own weakness because we're in this world, and God knows that. But if you fall into this mindset of now I can send quote unquote all I want to. There's the problem. The all you want to. See, now you're not struggling against sin. You're reveling in it. You'd be better off not accepting Christ, because at least then you would still be walking in ignorance, but now you know better. And you're disrespecting what God has done. And again, remember, it's the same God from the Old Testament. The quote-unquote mean God. It's the same one. And this is how, you know, this is not how you want to behave towards the Lord. Now, I want to switch gears a little bit. We're going to go to our Bible line, but we're going to look at the book of John here in a minute. We're going to look at the book of John, chapter 21. We're going to do verses 15 through 23. Now, Christ has risen. He's been appearing before the disciples, and he makes yet another appearance. This is directly after he appears to them. You're probably familiar with the story where they're trying to catch fish, and he tells them, you know, he's standing on the shore and tells them to throw the net on the other side of the boat, and they catch a bunch of fish. Now, the Lord is reappearing. Jesus is reappearing here. Basically, he's dealing with business. He's taking care of business. And in the passages we're about to read here, he's dealing with Peter. Because, as you know, Peter denied the Lord when he was arrested and drug off for fear. Now, the Lord had warned him before this that you're not ready for this, because he was, you know, up and down. He was like, no, you're not going to go be arrested. You're not going to go be, you know, crucified. And Jesus was like, no, I've got to do this. You're not even understanding. You're just looking at the worldly. And then Peter follows up and says, well, if you're going, then I'm going. I'm not going to leave your side. And again, the Lord was like, man, you're not even ready for this. I realize you're saying that. You think you can do it, but I'm telling you, you can't. And then he winds up telling him, you know, before the cock crows, you're going to have denied me three times, which, of course, transpired. So the Lord reappears here, and he's got to deal with Peter. He's got to deal with Peter and his denial of Christ. Now, there's several ways to look at this. You can look at it as like, you know, the Lord is dealing with a technicality here, you know, because Peter had denied him, and the Lord had warned that, you know, if anyone who denies me, you know, I will deny him. But I don't really think that's necessarily what he was doing, because the Lord already knew in advance and told him, you know, you're just simply not ready. And, you know, you think about Peter was carrying this, he had to have been carrying this guilt around, you know. He realized, looking back, you know, it's been a little bit here since all of this transpired, you know, because our own experience, you think about yourself, our own experiences, we're often, or, you know, we're harder on ourselves than other people are on us, you know. Like, you'll be guilty for an interaction with somebody you feel like you did wrong, and then maybe years later, you know, you see that person and you finally just say, man, I'm really, you know, sorry. And they're like, about what? And it's like, well, you know, years ago this happened. And they're like, man, I already forgot about that. And it's like a weight coming off of you. You know, you realize it was you yourself that's been beating yourself up all this time, where the other person, you know, really wasn't that even that big a deal. I mean, they might have been mad at the time, but then later on they moved on. Peter had been carrying a great guilt on him over his denial of the Lord, especially after having, you know, talked so big about he was going to go do this. And I think part of that guilt, I think it's fair to assume, or, you know, hypothesize, that a part of that guilt was weighing him down to the extent that it destroyed his confidence. You know, I mean, the Lord had said he's going to establish his church through Peter, and yet, how is that? He had to be sitting here thinking, I couldn't even stand up and say, yes, I know him, for fear, and I'm going to do this. So the Lord has showed up. Now he's dealing. He's going to deal with this. This has got to be taken care of, because these things have to be set in motion. Like I said, we're going to be in chapter 21. We're going to start at verse 15. I don't know if I'll go through all of it or not, or if, you know, at once, or if I'll read and stop. Just, you know, knowing me, probably read and stop. So when they had dined, so they were eating. So when they had dined, Jesus saith to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me more than these? He saith unto him, yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. He saith unto him, feed my lambs. Now, of course, he's going to go through this. You're all probably familiar. He's going to go through this three times. You notice that that matches the three denials. So he's having him deal with this, and he's asking him the same question. Do you love me? And he says, yes, Lord, you know I love you. Now, Jesus' response here winds up being more or less the same thing. He says, feed my lambs. You notice his response is, well, if you love me, then do this. This is what you need to do. For the umpteenth time, there's no empty emotionalism or talking about an emotional affection or a feeling. He says, well, if you love me, then go do this thing. He saith unto him again the second time, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? He saith unto him, yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. He saith unto him, feed my sheep. You know, this is the same answer. He asks him the same question, and Peter gives him the same answer. And again, well then, feed my sheep. Do what you need to do. I think it's worth noting here the difference between the denial and the acknowledgement. The denial, Peter, when Peter denies Jesus, it's emotional based because he's afraid. You know, he's afraid these people are staring at him like, you're one of them, aren't you? You surely, I swore I saw you with him. He was afraid. When you're emotionally whipped up, you're going to make less than optimal decisions. You see, now contrast that with the love. The Lord is asking him, do you love me? Yes, you know I love you. Okay, then, there's no emotionalism involved here. He says, go do this. See the difference? Action. The denial, the sin in the denial was all based on emotionalism more than action. Yes, he simply spoke that he didn't, I tell you, I don't know who this man is. And that was all emotional based. You see what I'm saying? It was all emotional based because he was afraid, and understandably so. But it wasn't about action. He didn't run off. Now, if Peter had just left the country, moved to another country, never mentioned the name Jesus Christ again, said this was the biggest bunch of malarkey ever, I shouldn't have got caught up in that, I don't know this guy, you know, all that believing he was the Son of God, that was obviously wrong, I'm going to go out here and till the soil on another continent or something. You know, that would have been an action of denial. I mean, that would have been like an action of denial. What he did when he was speaking and saying, I don't know, he was doing it out of fear. In other words, it was a sin, and it was sin because he did this sin. I'll spit it out in a minute. Wrapped up in emotion. If you're emotional about something, you're not going to make optimal decisions. Regardless of what those emotions is, regardless of what those emotions are, if you're wrapped up in emotion, if you are head over heels in love with what you think is the girl of your dreams, you need to be careful because you're wrapped up in emotionalism and you may not be making an optimal decision. You might be ignoring some huge red flags waving in your face because you're making decisions based on emotionalism rather than stepping back and going, well, hold on a minute. You know, if you're caught up in covetousness, you know, I want this new car. Man, I went and looked at this new car. It's so sweet. Oh, I want this car so bad. I want it, want it, want it, want it. And you let yourself get caught up in covetousness. And then you decide, you know you can't afford it. Just stop because you know you can't afford it. But you say, well, I'll go down there and see what kind of deal they can give me. Why? You know you can't afford it, but you go down there. Because you're caught up in covetousness. You're caught up in emotion. I really, really want it. As if this car is magically going to bring you happiness. Sin has consequence. Do not covet. When you covet, you quit seeing things clearly. you get this delusion, you get overcome by a delusion that a thing is going to make you happy, be it, you know, a new car, a better house, a pretty woman. None of these things will bring you happiness. You might find a certain amount of enjoyment. You might enjoy your trip to work in your new car versus your old hoopty car. But it's not going to bring you happiness. You see, you get caught up in an emotional delusion because you're so caught up now. And you go down there knowing you can't afford it. And of course, salesman, it's his job to pour gas on your covetousness. He's going to say, well, let's take it for a test drive. You're not going to turn that down. He's going to get you in the car, and then you're going to be talking. And he's going to be like, you know, man, your car looks really nice. This car got your name written all over it, man. Man, I'll tell you what, you can be rolling, man. Your neighbor's going to be jealous, and they're just feeding that. Feeding it because you're emotional. Getting all emotional. And then they get you in there. Now that you're all emotional, you walking around the car. Now you ain't even putting up. You ain't even fronting. You just walking around the car. Man, this thing. God, this is sweet. The color's pretty. It's perfect. And he's just sitting there grinning like, mm-hmm. And then they get you in the office. Again, you done showed up knowing you can't afford this thing. They get you in the office. And they come up with the deal. For payment that you're sitting there, there's a little voice in the back of your head going, you can't make this payment. My gosh, you can't make that. And you start sitting there thinking, well, yeah, but if I quit eating, you know, I mean, I don't need to be eating three times a day. Hell, I cut that down to like once a day and save that money right there on food. And this car gets a little better gas mileage, so that adds up. Like something could fall out of the sky and I could wind up with some money. And pretty soon, they got you driving out in a car you can't afford. And then the payment shows up and you're like, oh shit, what did I do? I mean, I like this car, but damn, I can't afford this. See how silly the idea is? That God forbids, you know, that God warns you against sin because he don't want you to have no fun. He just don't want you to have a new car. He don't even want you to want a new car. No, that's not it. Let's see here. Finally, he says to him a third time. Okay, here we are. We're verse 17. He saith unto him the third time, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? Peter was grieved because he's asked him three times. Peter's grieved. But see, the Lord is breaking through. I really believe what the Lord was doing here was breaking through, hammering through this guilt that was weighed around Peter's neck. Remember, the Lord knew ahead of time what Peter was going to do. He told him what he was going to do before he did it. You know, like I said, it's like going back to somebody finally, and then they tell you, wind up finding like you've been walking around feeling bad about that for a long time, and it turns out they forgot all about it. So the Lord is breaking through Peter beating up himself, Peter feeling bad about himself, Peter running himself down and convincing himself that he's somehow, now he has blown it, and there's no coming back from it. But see, the Lord has a purpose for him. If Peter's convinced that there's no coming back from the denial, then he's not going to fulfill what he needs to do. That's why the Lord keeps saying, do this then. Do this if you love me. Maybe Peter had been walking around saying, you know, I said I love the Lord. I talked all that shit. Now and then look what I did. Now Peter's grieved because he said unto him the third time, lovest thou me? And he said unto him, Lord, thou knowest all things, thou knowest that I love thee. Jesus saith unto him, feed my sheep. Verily, verily, I say unto thee, when thou wast young, thou girdest thyself and walkest whither thou wouldest. But when thou shalt be old, thou shalt stretch forth thy hands, and another shall gird thee and carry thee whither thou wouldest not. This spake he, signifying by what death he should glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he saith unto him, follow me. Now, when he says, follow me, he's literally, when you read through this, they get up because they were sitting there eating. They'd finished up eating. He says, follow me. This is going to be read two ways. Obviously, follow him in the spiritual sense, but as we're going to read a few more verses. They literally got up and started walking. So he finished telling him, he says, follow me. And they get up and start walking. I'm sure, to speak further. Again, Peter had been, when you get ate up with something and you turn it over and over and over and over in your mind, like I say, a lot of times we're harder on ourselves than anybody else is. The Lord, then when someone comes at you from the outside, when the Lord is coming at him and keeps asking him over and over, do you love me? This breaks through. You can see Peter on the third time, he's grieved with it. He's upset. He's like, Lord, you know all things. And you know I love me. Now, he'd been going around telling himself, man, I don't know. But now he's like, Lord, wait, you know everything. You know I love you. And the Lord says, okay, then do what you need. Do what I need you to do. And then he even goes further and says, you're going to pay, you're going to suffer. No, you're going to suffer for my name. Now, I wanted to read on a little further because we'll get to a little thing that, people will misunderstand. It even tells us people misunderstood at the time. Then Peter turning about there, because now they're walking. They were sitting, they just finished up eating. They had this discussion. Now he says, follow me. They get up. Now they're walking. Then Peter turning around seeth the disciple whom Jesus loved following, which had also leaned on his breast at supper and said, Lord, which is he that betrayeth thee? Peter, seeing him, saith to Jesus, Lord, and what shall this man do? Jesus saith unto him, if I will that he tarry till I come, what is that to thee? Follow thou me. Then went this saying abroad among the brethren, that disciple would not die. Yet Jesus said not unto him, he shall not die, but if I will that he tarry till I come, what is that to thee? Now, it's something that gets misunderstood because people read that and it's like, well, if I don't want him to die before I return, what's that to you? And people at the time even misunderstood that as Jesus saying. But that completely, that misses the point because that's not even what he said. See, he's walking along with Peter. He's got Peter lined up. He says, follow me. No doubt they're going to discuss some other things that aren't written here. But he goes walking and Peter turns around and looks and this guy's kind of following behind, not sure, kind of awkward. What am I supposed to do? And Peter says, Lord, what do we have this man do? And Jesus' response here is don't worry about him. Jesus just broke down and told him, do this. If you love me, feed my sheep, feed my lambs, feed my sheep. Now, Peter says, but what about this guy? And the Lord's response is all but literally, don't worry about what other people are doing. You do what I've instructed you to do. He says, look, if I want this guy to not even die until I return, what's that to you? What he spoke here is something outlandish. If I want this guy to live for however many thousands of years until my return, what is that to you? In other words, it's none of your business. Don't worry about what other people are doing. You follow me. He just got done telling him, do this, feed my lambs, feed my sheep. Now follow me. They get up and walking. He also means literally follow me. And then he turns around. Well, what about this guy? And Jesus' response is, don't worry about anybody else. You do what I need you to do. I got plans for other people too. Don't worry about what other people are doing. Don't worry about what this guy is doing, what this guy is saying. And, but yeah, Lord, but look, God doesn't have to let you in on all his plans. If you need to know something, you're always on a need to know basis with the Lord. If you need to know something, to do what he needs you to do, he'll tell you. Otherwise, don't worry about it. God knows what he's doing. What about this guy, Lord? What would you have this man do? He's going to tell him. Don't worry. He's going to let that guy know. It ain't your job. Why do people always want to worry about, but what about everybody else? He's like, look, you don't worry about that. You've got your own thing to do. I've instructed you on what to do. Things are going to fall into place. You're going to be in positions where you're going to have to do things. You just take care of your business. Don't worry about what I might have planned for somebody else. It's none of your business. And yet, even today, people that don't understand will say, yeah, but the Lord said right there
that guy wouldn't die, and then that guy died. It's just one of those things, these contradictions in the Bible or something.
They just simply told him, don't worry about what he's doing. It don't matter what crazy thing I might want this guy to do. If I'm going to say this guy ain't going to die till I return, that's up to me. It's not up to you. It's not your call. You take care of yourself. Don't worry about everybody else's business. You just worry and focus on taking care of you. And that's a relief. You know, being up in everybody's business is a lot of work. Life is simpler. Following the Lord is simpler. Just focus on what God wants you to do. Don't be worried about everybody else. Lord, take care of everybody else. Do your own thing. You won't be responsible for everybody else. You ain't supervising. You ain't micromanaging what everybody else is doing. Lord told him, I have this simple thing. I have this very specific, I shouldn't say simple. I have this very specific thing for you to do. I'm going to put you in the position to do that. Be sure you do it. You're not responsible for what this other guy is doing. I'm not telling you you have to supervise all these other people and make sure they are responsible for them too. I'm giving you specific things you need to do. Take care of your business. That's what you need to do. If you love me, do these things. If you're doing them, don't worry about your emotional state. You can let all that go. Just do it. That's your love. You're demonstrating it, your love, your faith. You're tearing it out. Don't worry about what the guy behind us is going to do. I got a plan for him too. I trust me, the Lord is competent. He can figure out how to do it. He's not going to need your help. You just do what he's got you to do. Don't be up in other people's business. We'll wrap up on that. I hope you got something out of it. Hope you got something out of it today. I appreciate y'all joining me every week. I really do. Hope, like I said, I hope you enjoyed the entirety of the show. Of course, obviously, the Christian-specific segment, that is the thing, the focus of the show, and I especially hope you got something out of that as well. As always, I hope you'll get a chance to check out everything. We got something new up here on Radio Albin every Monday through Friday every week, so hope you get a chance to check all of that out. And as always, I hope you'll get a chance to come back here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.